saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan. And this week we are talking about Chicago, MagicCon Chicago. We just got back. We're going to give you the recap, how our trip went and some of the announcements that happened while we were there.
A full rundown top to bottom of MagicCon Chicago. You got that right.
And funnily enough, a lot of these, I think, announcements are going to be borderline new to us because we didn't actually get to see these announcements being made. We were doing kind of our own stuff over here.
We had a busy weekend.
Yeah, we did have a lot of stuff going on, but we did get to see some stuff through the grapevine. So I'm going to be excited to take a quick look and see if anything looks maybe good for CDH.
Me too. Yes, I am very excited about this.
Also, I posted this video a little bit earlier this week because we went to Chicago and we had an ad for Steve Ellis, and I forgot to put the link for the ad that I was supposed to in the description. But Steve Ellis has a Kickstarter for some of his designs, like some of the companions, Luris, other stuff like that. There's a bunch of stretch goals. Go check it out. The art is super cool, and click the link that's in our description right now to go find it.
We should just start talking about the trip.
Get right into it. We flew in to Chicago on Thursday. Friday was the first day of the con. That's when it began.
We were just hanging out Thursday.
Yeah.
Eating pizza. And getting that's all that food. We did.
I also want to start by saying everyone was wonderful. Everyone was super nice. Everyone was super friendly. Everyone that came up, thank y'all. It was like one of the coolest experiences ever. Each one of these cons is so fun. There's so much stuff going on. Everyone's so nice.
This one always feels more surreal than the last one. And that one feels more surreal than the one before that. I just feel very thankful that for everyone that came up to us and participated in all the stuff that we were doing.
Yeah, it was super fun. Besides the cold, it was really cold. I said chapstick, you can zoom in maybe. My lips are still destroyed. It's still, I don't know. I think I just, maybe this is a me thing because your lips seem fine.
You know what? It wasn't until yesterday. Yesterday is really when I started to notice that they were getting a little chap, and I'm feeling a little bit of the after effects today.
Yeah.
I did not get it as bad as you did for sure.
Yeah, I think maybe I should have applied more chapstick. Maybe that's
more
my
chapstick
for next
time.
More chapstick.
Yeah, we're just going to be thick of chapstick. Like all the photos we're going to take in Vegas are just going to be shiny lips.
Sloppy, wet, slimy lips. Yeah. And I hate chapstick too. That's kind of why I think I don't put on enough.
Me too. I've never purchased chapstick in my life.
Let's talk about Friday. Friday was the first day of the con.
Yeah, we played a lot of CEDH on Friday.
That was basically the majority of our CEDH playing. We played at the CEDH Learn to Play event that was hosted by Lua and also Scrybabies.
Yeah, Lua of the Scrybabies is the one who runs this one and does most of the managing for it.
Yeah, it was in the Content Creator Central. Lua's done it, I think, like a couple of years now, a couple of Magic Cons in a row. It's been great.
Year sounds right, yeah.
A ton of the people that come up, normally people that have played one game, two games, maybe not at all, but they play Commander, they know Magic, they know the game, they just haven't really tried CDH yet. So we're not teaching how to play Magic, we're just kind of like not politicking and just kind of look at your hand, I'm going to pretend like I forgot about it and we'll just like help you mulligan and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like helping introduce people to CEDH. Yeah. As opposed to like starting from the bare bones basics.
Right, yeah. But it was a blast. It was so fun. We sat down at 10. I don't think we basically didn't get up until like 5, except for like a bathroom break or two.
I took a quick little food break. So you got in one extra game that I did not play.
Do you want to talk about what we played?
Yeah.
I don't remember the games exactly. I didn't write them all down, but I remember the decks that I played and I loosely remember how they went.
Me too. I remember the games that I won.
Yeah, let's go over those. Let's go over those. The one game that I do remember is the very first game, the first time that I sat down. It was someone's second, I think, or third time playing Couric. They hadn't played a ton. Maybe, I don't remember exactly, but they had a win on turn one.
It was freaking wild.
She's like, I think I'm going to keep this hand. He just went for it and he had enough mana to cast Couric, play the Blood Celebrant, the thing that for one black mana makes a mana of any color.
Yeah, and then he also had Wishclaw Talisman.
Yeah, Wishclaw
Talisman. Too.
So
yeah.
He basically can make a, what's the red one that you love in Chunky that I can't think of the name? Treasonous Ogre.
Yeah.
Build your own Treasonous Ogre, 3 life to make a mana. And then with the Wishclaw Talisman, he was able to set up it was able to do something with
pick one combo.
Chainer and Grey Merchant of Asphodel. And
I
just
think
like,
he ended up going with. What's the name of the Transmute card?
Oh, the Transmute card ended up in play somehow, but there were some steps before that. I don't remember them exactly.
That card combos with something.
Yeah. I know, we felt bad. We're like, I'm sorry, I don't know exactly how this card deck ends. Yeah. I told him, I know Chainer's got to be involved normally. Grey Merchant of Asphodel also have to be involved. And we kind of worked together and we figured out how to make it happen. But
there were multiple lines that he could have taken in order to make sure we were all dead on that turn one.
Right.
Going fourth, which was also wild, too.
Yeah, weird, good start for the day. But yeah, let's go over your games.
I brought three decks this weekend. I brought Thrasios Timna, which I only played once and not even on Friday. I brought Ketramos, because I've been playing that a little bit, and I only played one game with it on Friday. I actually put Chunky back together.
Yes,
the
Atali.
Thursday before the event. Yeah.
So like seven of your eight games were Atali? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I played a ton of Chunky, and he did fine. I won. I got two game wins in with Chunky, which doesn't really matter. It's to learn to play CEDH.
Right,
event.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spike it, right?
Right,
but
yeah,
if I happen to have a turn two Treasonous Ogre, I'll play a turn two Atali. That's fine. That's kind of what I realized this weekend is that we've been pushing towards that mindset of, well, the bans didn't really matter in CEDH because the good decks are still the good decks. And like red got a hit from Dockside Extortionist, but the decks that were playing Mana Crypt and Jeweled Lotus don't need Mana Crypt and Jeweled Lotus to still be good because there's other ways that you can make that mana for a deck like Atali.
Yeah.
And
how did that feel with Atali losing out like those three very important pieces?
You really don't notice it because the most important things that help you get Atali out the quickest are still available, like Treasonous Ogre. And like, you know, the Seething Songs
Mana
are out there now.
Stuff
yeah.
like that.
The only major difference for me is that I'm leaning in more on some of those rituals now. Like, I wasn't playing Sticker Goblin before, but I'm getting used to Sticker Goblin now because I didn't have Dockside as an infinite mana outlet in the deck anymore. So I still do want a way to be able to make infinite mana with a creature. And the Sticker Goblin gave me a turn to Treasonous Ogre this weekend, which seemed great.
Even when it's just sometimes three mana to make four or five, or when it can make six mana, I think that's the top. Like, that's still great. Like, that's all Atali wants is just more mana, just more points. Just as hungry for mana.
Exactly.
So yeah, I felt like you were a threat the whole time. And I feel like most of the games, I was in your games. We were playing the same games together. I feel like most of the games that you lost, it was because everyone figured out how to gang up on you early enough.
Yeah, it's like someone had creature counters
or
something.
We had three pieces of interaction between the three of us, and that was enough. And the games that we didn't have, two pieces of interaction were the games that you won. And that's what Atali does. If you don't have the interaction, Atali's going to win.
Yeah, exactly. So Atali still felt really strong. It still felt like every single game I could be super resilient as long as I could hit seven mana.
Yeah, and Magus of the Moon also. Magus and Blood Moon, I feel like they like actually did really a lot of work for you this
weekend. All weekend, the Blood Moon effects were super good for me. I purposefully don't play things like Endurance and other things that will stop someone from winning the game in the long term, but I do like cards like the Blood Moon effects and even Manglehorn that will help slow the table down for when I need to build up to my first Chunky. And Magus of the Moon in particular, too, a creature you can search for, just made it much easier to slow games down.
Yeah, I think also specifically, weirdly, what those Magus and Manglehorn does is it makes it more difficult for your opponents to hold up interaction, because now if Manglehorn's out, the Arcane Signet that they put out comes in tapped, right? So they can't hold up Swords to Plowshares anymore. Or if the Blood Moon shuts off my blue mana sources, now my Swan Song isn't on for the Tainted Pack that you reveal off of Atali or something like that. So I think the fact that like that's what those effects do for you. They don't slow your opponents down. They make it difficult for your opponents to interact with you. That's why they're good.
And I really liked it against like Thrasios Timna, playing against it like these four color decks this weekend. Because
Sans red decks specifically.
Yeah, because I kind of don't even care if you have your Mana Rocks or Mana Dorks out already, because that kind of means that Blood Moon acts as a rule of law for you is kind of what I was realizing this weekend. Kind of an even better rule of law, because you're so pinched on your colors in a color specific deck where instead of being able to cast one spell per turn, you can only cast one spell per turn cycle, because that's all the pips that you have for that turn cycle.
Yeah, so it's not like it's not even like you get another time to cast a spell on an opponent's turn, because you've used your mana for the cycle. So yeah, you're really, I totally understand what you're saying.
So I really like that. I had a blast playing with Chunky this weekend, so I'm definitely going to be keeping Chunky around. There were a couple of cards that I was playing just to test out. Like, I saw Geosurge in some decks, and I was like, wow, that seems so cool. And the one game that I had it was like, how the fuck am I going to make four red mana consistently for it?
Yeah, red is, even a two-color deck is difficult. You have so many Gaia's Cradles and Mana Vaults, and so much of your mana is tied up in not all red. That kind of makes sense. That's
my mana
cast.
Dorks tap for green mana, 90% of the time, right? So it makes it very difficult. So I took that out. I put LED in this morning, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I should have had LED in from the start.
You're very rarely going to have a ton of cards in your hands, often like getting rid of one card in your hand to cast a Tali, that feels great.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like at that point, it's my Jeweled Lotus. It's three mana, and I'm going to get new stuff off of a Tali.
You'll Underworld Breach that card later or something.
That's the other thing. Like with Underworld Breach, sometimes it can just help me get multiple Atalis in the same turn then by getting me like nine mana a lot of the time.
I know you took out Grinding Station, right? So there's no way for you to actually like win the game off of an Underworld Breach.
Which I don't think I need, because I think I just need the mana to skim through everyone else's decks to win with Atali.
I feel like normally when you play Underworld Breach, it's like a way for you to get three more Atalis. You know what I mean? Like you flashback another Atali copier, you metamorphosis the Atali to be able to flash do it again or whatever, and then that's enough. If you can get like three or four Atalis in a turn, normally, you know, your opponents are playing good cards. You're going to find two tutors, and with two tutors, you can set up a win, right?
Yeah, how do you lose at that point? Yeah. So, yeah, really liked Atali's performance this weekend. It was a blast.
You also played Ketchermos, which we played on Saturday for the Scribe Babies Live. That was awesome. How do you feel about Ketchermos?
I still like Ketchermos, but not enough that I want to keep him around. He has the same problem as Chunky, where you don't have blue. So you can get interacted with, and there's nothing you can do to stop people from interacting with you 90% of the time. But the biggest problem with Ketchermos versus Chunky is that I don't think Ketchermos has the resiliency that Atali does.
Yeah.
Because of how many pieces you need in Ketchermos to churn through your deck, if you lose one of them and you kind of feel like you have to start over completely, whereas Atali, I still have six lands in play and a couple mana dorks, so if I just top deck a land, here comes Chunky again, and I can try again.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I also, I understand what you're saying is like they play a similar role, but yeah, Atali is just a little bit more resilient. Like Food Chain, the combo that works with Atali when it's not food chaining, it's still turning all the creatures that maybe you got from your opponents into more mana to cast another Atali. It still does the work.
It gets rid of your Atali for you, so you can cast Atali again too.
In Ketchermos, you need, like, yes, they all do kind of work with your commander, but you need like two or three of them all together at the same time before they do something. Otherwise, like, they just say whenever you would lose the life, you just gain the life back. Like, that's not really great on its own. When you can do it 35 times, then it's great. When you have the other pieces, that's good. But
yeah, but like, if I have a discard outlet and I don't have the graveyard exile effect, who cares that I have the discard outlet?
Right, it doesn't do anything yet. You need to start going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, and when you win with the deck, you get, it feels big brain. The one game that I played on Friday, I ended up winning through a bunch of interaction because of Angel's Grace. The other thing is Ketchermos's ability is not a May.
Oh,
so
I
have to draw, and if I go through my entire deck, I'll lose the game, right? But when you have Containment Construct and you go through your Build Your Own Necropotence line with Ketchermos, you get access to all of this, all of the cards in your deck. And I was trying to go through an Abdel Adrian line, and someone had removal for the Corpse Knight that was going to just, you know, loop and win the game and make everyone lose all their life. But I have found a way where I already had Animate Dead on some other creatures.
You had already tried this line before and the Animate Dead was still there or
something, right? Exactly. So yeah. I could get rid of the Animate Dead and have it come back and bring back the Corpse Knight and then continue going through the loop.
Yeah, it was awesome. That was a great win. Like you said, when the deck wins, you're like, oh, my brain feels enormous. Like, yeah, it feels super complex.
It just feels so hard to put these wins together.
I wonder, and I'm not sure, in 1v1 or if life totals were lower, I wonder if it'd be a better deck, because a decent chunk of your pieces are white creatures that can sometimes attack okay, specifically Ketchermos. So I wonder because there was a couple times where you were like attacking for nine kind of easily because you just had a couple of shit left over. It's going to be good in modern is kind of what I'm saying. The damage, the pressure that a white black would normally be able to put on underneath something like this doesn't matter in CDH.
Yeah, you don't even care that your life total is less than 20 because you get to play cards outside of Orzhov.
In modern stuff. Psychic too, right? Frog works really well with Ketchermos.
Yeah, right, it completely
like
busts it wide open.
Okay, cool.
Let's talk about your deck.
Yeah, I played Hashatan. I have now played 10 games with Hashatan. I have now won one game with Hashatan.
Technically, we've played 11 games.
Is it 11
with
now? Did I play another?
Because at Scribe Babies Live, we got two games.
Oh, we
games
did get two,
in.
And you're right. It is 11. You're right.
I didn't think about that till right now. I forgot about that.
And Scribe Babies Live, the first game, I was actually able to win it pretty quickly. Hilariously, Hashatan died, and I was just able to, I think, set up like a protected Thassa's Oracle win.
Grand Abolisher is a hell of a card.
Yeah, that was all it was. Esper Colors, you can still do that. I think there's a couple reasons why I'm not having success with the deck. One, skill level. I'll admit that. Two, my deck is probably not the best version of the deck. I went through a ton of iterations so far. I had a whole bunch of big fatty creatures. I trimmed them and now I only have three or four. I haven't really figured out the right build of this deck yet, and that's probably it too. And I think the style of the deck is just not one that I want to play right now. The deck that wants to just like passively like wait and hold until you can do one big thing. I don't like that in CDH. I want to be doing a lot of little things in CDH. I want to be active from the beginning. I want my commanders to give me card advantage. And the protected win thing, yes, you have a win that is difficult to interact with. But Timna Thrasios can also set up those wins with Grand Abolisher and Silence. And because of all the card draw you have and all the redundancy in combos, to me, it feels pretty easy. Like every time I win with Timna Thrasios, realistically, it's a 3-card combo. I'm Silence, A, B, and that's the combo. And it does not really feel that difficult to set up if you have just a ton of tutors and a ton of A plus Bs, whereas Hashatan, you only do the one thing, and that thing is difficult to interact with, but it's not, because they can just lightning bolt Hashatan, or they can just do other things ahead of time that they know what the deck does. They can just get rid of the discard outlet earlier, or they can respond. This is someone tried to, I had infinite mana with Thrasios, and someone was, I'm going to discard this Notion Thief with my Hashatan, trigger the Hashatan. I said, hold it right there, buddy. I'm going to respond with my infinite mana that I have here, and just draw on top of that with Thrasios. There was a Bowmaster at the same time that I was just like, okay, in response to each Bowmaster coming at me, I'll draw a card with Thrasios. You heal it, you shoot a damage at me. In response to that, I'm going to draw a card, another card with Thrasios. And I just keep on going there until I find the removal for Bowmaster.
Yeah.
Okay, take that 11 damage, and then I just continue on. To be honest, I don't even know if I needed to take the 11 damage. I think I didn't have a flash. I'm getting
if
ahead of
myself.
If you
didn't have blue mana for a flash enabler, then
I had to let it resolve or whatever. Either way, there are other decks that can still provide very difficult to interact with wins that also have card advantage. And me as a player, I need the card advantage. I need the forgiveness. I need to know that when I miscount my win next turn, I already drew 7 cards with my commander. So I'll be able to survive the turn cycle and then try again next turn. Like for me as a player, that's just what I need. So I'm off Hashatan for now. I played 3 games on Friday, lost all of them. And then I played like 9 total games.
Before this weekend.
Yeah, on Friday. Sorry. No, sorry.
On Friday.
We played 9 games total that day, I think, right? So I played 3 in Hashatan and then 6 with Timna Thrasios. And I think I went like 4-2 or 3-3 with Timna Thrasios afterwards. Like the first time I played Timna Thrasios after putting aside Hashatan, I won and it felt like, I'm back at home. You know what I mean? So,
well, I think there's a lot of merit to what you were saying about the difference between just like holding everything up for one big turn versus like the little things that you do. Because Timna Thrasios goes, okay, turn 1 mana dork. Okay, turn 2, I get to do a little something else and hold up mana for interaction.
Right.
Turn 3, here comes Thrasios because my turn 2 was actually the card advantage engine that I played, my Timna.
And now I can hold the fear, so now I can hold the free interaction.
Exactly. And then like you have so many other little things that are slowly getting you through the game that are pushing you to be set up for the late game, where Hashatan doesn't push you to the late game. Hashatan does it in a very slow manner and doesn't like help you accrue additional value at the same time.
Right. Like once you get the Hashatan thing there and online and you have a way to discard a card and you have enough mana to put something in and you have the thing to put in your hand, once you're there, that's a great spot to be. I can't argue that, but I have had a hard time getting to that spot.
I've heard a lot of people say, I don't know if I should be playing as many fatties.
Yeah.
Is the leveler good? Is this Angel's Grace line good? Like, because Grand Abolisher is already a ton of protection. Like, so do you need to assemble this purposeful 4-card combo when you have an optional 3-card combo?
That can be a 2-card when you want to pivot and say, I know I'm playing against one blue deck that has no cards in hand and the other two decks aren't playing blue.
I'm
just jam now.
I'm playing against like a Tali and something else.
Right,
yeah,
I'm just going for it.
Yeah.
I want a game on Sunday where I had one land in play, Mox Diamond and another Mox, a Chrome Mox or something like that. It was a game that I had no business winning, but slowly I have Vampiric Tutor Sahir to go get the Demonic Consultation. I already had Thoracle. I used a Force there, la-da-da-da, get to my turn and just like, I had it there. Even though Hashatan is still in those colors, to me feels like it has a more difficult time.
Well, it's going to have the less opportunity to do that because you're playing Hashatan, you're incentivized to do other things and go for other lines too because it's not your main win condition.
You got to get the Hashatan in first every time before you do the other thing. Whereas like I can just play Devoted Druid. That's a mana dork. I can just use that now. I don't
exactly
kill that if you want. I'll get it back with the thing.
My Machine God's Effigy will let me play Thrasios then.
My Machine God's Effigy is still a mana. You know what I mean? Like it's still something that I can play when there's a Drannith Magistrate out, where as if there's a Drannis Magistrate out, this Horde and Broodlord in my hand looks like dog shit. You know what I mean? I don't want that at all. So those are my thoughts. I'm not saying Hashatan's bad. Hashatan's awesome. It's just not a deck that fits my playstyle.
Yeah, and it's still very new. I don't think that the right list for it is out there.
Yeah, that's the big ticket.
And if it is, it's just not very well known. But once it becomes more established, I want to see more tournament wins with it. I don't want to see tournament top 16s with it. I think top 16s hold some weight. I don't think they should be like the holy grail. I don't want players to go, oh, I got top top 16, so I'm happy and I'm done.
Right, because realistically, we've talked about this a lot. A lot of the times, you only have to win a couple games, and then you can draw yourself into top 16, which is awesome. That's a part of the tournament. I love that. But if you win the tournament, that's two guaranteed wins against good players that you've just had. So that's like a big deal to me.
Yeah,
you can't draw in top 16. You can't draw in the finals. You won those games.
A win or even a top four get yeah. to, I think, is a hell of a lot more weight yeah. than yes. a top 16. And I think that the difference is as big of a difference between Thassa's Oracle and whatever the next best win condition yeah. is in CEDH.
Not to take anything away from getting top 16 or top 13. That's awesome. I've only done that one time. I suck. I've been playing for 5 years. Like, that's an awesome achievement. But I just think it's a huger achievement. Like, it's a big... It's just a much bigger leap to win a tournament.
As someone who's never top four but has top 13 and top 16, I feel that gap. What that jump is.
It's a jump.
I want to see Hashatan win a bunch of tournaments
yeah.
before I'm ready to say, you know what, this is going to be like a staple in CEDH now.
But I think we'll see it in tournaments. You'll see it for
You'll
sure.
You'll see it. You'll see it.
Should we talk about it Saturday next? We talked about Friday. We played 10 to 5. CDH learned to play. That was the whole day, basically, of Chicago.
Yeah, basically.
We did some fun stuff afterwards with some friends on Friday night.
And then Saturday, we came back and we did...
Patreon meetup at noon, which was awesome. We got
yeah,
to meet
that
with
was great.
Yeah, meet up with a bunch of patrons, which was super fun. We had the Scrybabies Live.
Which was fucking awesome.
That was the coolest.
What a huge highlight of the weekend.
That was
yeah.
really fun. We got to play. I don't know how many people were there. To me, it felt like a billion. I think it was like closer to like 200.
The room definitely did feel full.
We had microphones on. It was weird hearing my voice in the microphone. I haven't performed in front of a crowd in a long time. So
I've
was
never played a game of Magic live in front of a crowd.
And I think
yeah.
it went really great. The crowd was really into it. Every time someone played a Sol Ring, and every time I put a Grand Abolisher on the stack and everyone starts cheering.
I Toxic Deluged for 14 life yeah. going down to 2, and it was a big moment.
And it was nice to have the crowd like, I Orcish Bowmastered to copy your Orcish Bowmaster, but your Bowmaster was Dance of the Deaded, which means it had +1/+1. I forgot that. And someone shouted out, Cam's Bowmaster's still alive. And we're like, oh, fuck, it is still alive. So
another big moment.
That was super
too.
Cool.
Yeah.
We got this. Someone threw this fish into the crowd. I don't know if you can see this or if it's in focus.
You can put it in my
camera
too. Yeah.
It's a fish for Into the Floodmaw, a tapped fish that you can give to someone. I played Into the Floodmaw and someone threw it at us and allowed us to keep it. So this is one of my favorite things that we've gotten from the weekend because this is cool as hell.
Yeah, that was so funny. I loved that moment.
So
yeah.
the crowd participation was super fun. Definitely looking forward to do more of those in the future. Just like live CDH games with new sets and stuff. Yeah, it was great. Scrybabies, they were wonderful. Lua and Tori, they were like super funny.
Always great.
Yeah, always great. It was a great time. Yeah, super fun.
It was just great. Yeah, and then we did a meet and greet.
Everyone also there was really wonderful and nice. They had to cap our line at some point, which felt kind of bad because some people were turned away. Which is kind of lame because I know it's really expensive to get to the Magic Cons and it's really expensive to get into the Magic Cons, to travel and everything there. So to be kind of turned away once you're already in line kind of feels lame.
Yeah, so I'm hoping we can do more
at
Vegas then with the meet and greet opportunity. But it was great. I just want to say again, thank you to everyone that came out to everything that we did on Saturday because it means the world to us. And it was so much fun to do all that stuff and meet everyone.
Yeah, it was so much fun. We were given a couple things over the weekend before we go to Sunday. I know I already brought up the fish that was super cool, but we also got some maple syrup from Jacob, which was really nice in these cool bottles.
Delicious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you try it?
Oh, no. But maple syrup is delicious.
Maple syrup just in general
is
delicious.
It's Canadian maple syrup.
It is
delicious. Yeah.
And then someone also 3D printed these keychain logos for us. I'm going to try to show you here. Can you see this? Isn't that neat?
That's super cool.
I just wanted to show off those things too because everyone gives us, you know, we got some tokens and stickers and I think these are just like some of the coolest things that we got.
Knickknacks and paddywhacks, I fucking love.
I love little knickknacks and paddywhacks.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to get a game in with Jesper actually because we've been friends with Jesper for a while, but I don't think we ever actually like met in person or were able to play in-person Magic.
Which was awesome. Yeah,
so that was really fun.
It was always great hanging with Jesper.
Tyler destroyed us. He had like turn 2, fairy, everything has flash. Turn 3, enduring vitality, everything makes a bunch of mana.
Perplexing Chimera and 2 counterspells in hand.
Yeah, Consecrated Sphinx in play. I was like, Jesus Christ, I want to go home. I'm so fucking hungry, Tyler.
He whipped off.
It was like after 9 hours of like doing stuff and meeting 1,000 people, and then Tyler's like, Perplexing Chimera, Consecrated Sphinx.
Like, I was like, I'm playing a Tali. I can't cast a Tali into a Perplexing Chimera.
You had a Jeska's Will on him for 5, and it needed to make exactly 5, and he was able to like flash out a spell because he had the Fairy Flasher.
And why did I do that?
Yeah, and then you're like, great, I have access to 6 mana. I guess I'll just do nothing and pass instead.
Yep, That was it.
Yeah, it was still awesome to get to play with Jesper and get to hang out with him, so that was really fun.
Yeah.
Sunday?
Sunday.
What the hell did we do Sunday?
At the Dragon Shield booth. Yeah, I got three games in at the Dragon Shield booth. One with Tim Nathrasios, just to justify me bringing it.
Yep.
Lost to a Yuriko player. Pretty grindy game. I think he mulled the four, too.
Oh, wow.
But he found Rhystic Study. He drew a ton of cards.
People don't play Rhystic Study in Yuriko. I think that's wrong.
You should, because it's the best card in the format.
Yes,
it's
it
so
doesn't
good.
Exactly fit your style of deck or what you're trying to do with Yuriko. That's okay. It doesn't have to.
It's fine.
I truly think we're at the point now where Rhystic Study is so powerful that it doesn't have to fit the style of deck. It just should just go in your deck.
I played two more games with Chunky then after that.
Everyone kept on coming over me and telling me that Cameron has a Blood Moon in play. they were very excited about your Blood Moon.
I was playing against Thrasios, Tevish. I was playing against Tim Nathrasios and then Blue Farm. No, it was Hashitan and then Blue Farm. That's what it was.
So a couple decks that did not play red in their deck at all, so couldn't use the red.
And my Blood Moon shut off my Carpet of Flowers,
which
prevented me from getting Chunky out for quite a while. So it just kind of made everyone else stumble for a little while, except for Blue Farm, who did a pretty good job of still being able to draw cards, but Hashitan was still able to keep interaction up consistently by having a Smothering Tithe in play and a Tivit, so was drawing off clues and stuff. And there was just a lot going on. It got very grindy, and it got to a turn where Blue Farm's untapping with a bunch of sculpted cards in their hand, and the Hashitan player's I'm gonna silence you because you've been sculpting. You're in a really good spot, and it passes over to me, and I need to top deck a land. And of course, there's Taiga right on top. That was finally the seventh mana for
real
Chunky.
Taiga, right?
A real Taiga. That's why it was on top.
Don't proxy. It'll go to the top.
Exactly, yeah.
No, proxy. The real cards always find their way to the top.
So, yes, that was the seventh mana I needed, and I had a Rionya in play from a couple of turns prior, just because I was I can't do anything else. Here's a five mana Rionya. And then it turned out, the first Chunky lets me cast Demonic Consultation to find Food Chain. I unfortunately don't exile Squee, but it's fine, because then I can move to combat. Rionya makes me two Chunkies.
Yeah.
And when you just flip into Diabolic Intent, you just find the pieces you need.
I know you were talking that sometimes it feels like luck with Itali because you don't know what you're going to hit, but I don't really think that it is. I think it's kind of Karkar and Sakashima-ish where yes, on paper, it does look like luck, but really it's not, because all of Magic is luck. You just turbo the luck out right now. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Rather than
waiting
four or five turns to see what's going to happen, you just say, let's condense it all and put all the math right in one spot here and just see what happens.
And sometimes you flip Tails and it's only mana and counterspells that you flip over.
You hit
with
two counterspells and Elvish Mystic and then nothing else.
I think Quark Sakashima, that's a great comparison.
Yeah, you cast Cataxian Probe 9 times and it just goes back to your hand every single time. And you go, all right, never mind.
It's okay,
But it's also, I think, weirdly, it's a great Magic Con deck, Itali is, because it's super fun. It does crazy plays that you're not aware of. It's super cool for new players a lot of times, too, because they get to see how a lot of different cards interact with each other, which I think is really interesting to watch play out. I think it turbocharges your ability to learn CDH. Like Karkar and Sakashima, you just condense the game into just one spot. So you learn a bunch of things all at once. I like that you have the deck back together.
Me too. The only thing that you have to do is just make sure when you're at the con, you flip all the cards over to make sure that everyone gets the cards back.
That's the big thing, because you do take everyone's cards.
Yeah, I almost took a Relic of Legends from someone this weekend, but it was a close call, he got it back.
You just gotta make sure, just turn all of your sleeves upside down at the end so you can get the stuff back.
Exactly. Yeah. And then mark all of your cards so that you know that they're your cards.
Yeah. only the good ones, the expensive ones.
Only the good ones,
put a little fingerprint mark in the good ones that are yours, just so you know which ones are yours.
Right in the corner, yeah.
Don't do that. That's cheating. Okay.
How'd your Dragon Shield booth games go?
Great. I wish I could tell you more specifically. I think I played four games and went 2-2, but I don't remember. One of them was that Ottawa game where I feel this one was a terrible one. There was a situation where I Worldly Tutored, was looking through my deck. Someone said hi, and I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm looking through my deck. I'm like, Orcish Bowmaster, that's a good card. I'll just put that one on top. And then I looked at my mana of Breeding Pool Ottawa, and I'm like, what the fuck? why am I not thinking right now?
God
so I was like,
damn.
I guess I'll wait for 700. I cast Thrasios, and then the Sauron player next to me is like, Force of Holy Thrasios. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And it ended up being it was a good move. He countered it again, actually, a second time. And the second time I had Fierce Guardianship. I was like, that was really smart to counter the Thrasios there. So I don't remember exactly all of those games that kind of merged together, but I do remember feeling that Tim Nathrasios, boy, is it forgiving. There was one time where, I don't know why, in my head, I was like, Devoted Druid can make three mana before it dies. I was like, tap for one, -1/-1 counter untap. Tap for a second, -1/-1 uncap. And then it'll die and I can tap for a third in my head. And then as I was doing it, I was like, That doesn't work, you dumbass. It's two mana. It'll die before you can tap it a third time. So I paid for fish. I did all of these things. I'm looking at my hand. If anyone was looking over, they're like, Dylan, you fucking moron. Because I had a Kinnan in my hand, a Thassa's Oracle, and the Squirrel. The Squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
With Hazel's Devoted Brewmaster. Play. And then a Demonic Tutor and something else. So I had any combo I could go for, any single one. And rather than Demonic Tutoring for one of the A plus Bs, I was like, I'll just Demonic Tutor for Grand Abolisher and then use my Squirrel that I have. And then I go through the line, I'm like, wait a minute, I have only three mana. This fucking sucks.
Damn.
So after that, I end up Imperial Sealing for a Force of Will to put it on top. I'm like, let me just try not die.
Yeah.
I have a Mystic Remora, which I paid for like a dumbass. I've done that multiple times recently where I should have just let the fish die because I needed an extra mana. I put the Force of Will on top. I draw it with the Mystic. I was able to use the Force of Will. The Devoted Druid was still there, so I could use it to besage you the Cody before Cody untapped. And I was just like, let me keep everyone. And they weren't able to do anything. I had two pieces of interaction to stay alive, untap with Grand Abolisher. And I was like, all right, jam the Squirrel now. And it was good. It was a perfect example of how forgiving the deck is even when you mess up, it allows you to recover, and that's why I think it's just such a powerful deck. Whereas Hashtaton, no messing up. If you're a genius, maybe Hashtaton's a better deck. If you're a regular person, I truly think Tim Nathrasius is just better. It's just forgiving. It doesn't matter. You can mess up so many times and still win the game.
You just keep all of your options. Yeah. I know. That's why I love it.
Exactly. Those are my games for the day. It was great. It was a great day getting to play at the Dragon Shield booth. That was super fun.
Yeah.
They actually had a whole section where we could play. There was an overhead thing. That was really cool. We were able to sell a bunch of sleeves at the Dragon Shield booth, play to win sleeves. So very, very fun time.
So thank you, Dragon Shield. We love you.
Super huge shout out to Dragon Shield.
Yeah. All right, so there was a lot of other shit that happened at MagicCon that we didn't get to experience, ticketed events, and we didn't get to do a lot in Artist Alley this time, but we did stop by and say hi to Jesper while we were over there. There was crummy pizza at the convention that I did get to experience, but some of the things we didn't get to see were the announcements that they made.
Yeah. You want to quick go over a couple of them?
We got a lot of cards from the new Tarkir set, which I think is the next set that we're going to.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Dragonstorm Tarkir. No, it's the other way around. Tarkir Dragonstorm.
Is that Storm Dragon card? Is that in Dragons of Tarkir or is that in something else?
No, that should be in Dragons
That's
of Tarkir.
That's in the set.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is so funny. You know, the Storm Scale is Mark Rosewater's scale of mechanics, if they'll come back to in a Magic set or not. And it's called the Storm Scale off of Storm.
And it means nothing.
And the new dragon is called Storm Scale Dragon.
Yeah.
That's perfectly named.
Yeah, I love that. I think everything, especially Dragonstorm, because of the iconic card Dragonstorm that you can go find.
Which better be reprinted.
I think it's a great hit. Should we talk about what the actual card is? I know you were just kind of talking about new cards.
Stormskill Dragon is a 6-mana 4/4 that is a dragon lord. Says other dragons you control get +1/+1, and of course it has flying because it's a dragon.
Yeah, and it has storm, most importantly.
It has storm, right? So it's kind of like the
Empty Thorns?
The Eve of the World Ooze, I think might be a better...
Oh, yeah.
But instead of making each ooze bigger, it makes all of your dragons bigger.
So if you were to have a storm count 5, each of your things would be giving +1/+1, so each thing would be a 9/9. Each dragon would be a 9/9, right?
Well, if storms... If it's the fifth spell, then you make 4 copies, yes. But if Storm's 5, then technically you make 5 copies.
Yeah,
right?
So I'm saying if you have cast 4 spells and then you cast this, you will get 4 additional dragons. Each of them will have +4/+4, basically, because you have 5 total dragons out.
Which means that's 8/8.
So,
which is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking Empty the Warrens is a decent backup plan for 60 card Storm decks. I don't know if this card is a reasonable option in CDH. I don't think you're going to be able to kill the table with this, but I do wonder if casting 5 spells. I wonder if Karkin Sakashima would play something like this. My gut says probably not, but I like the idea of getting storm payoffs that actually might be good in CDH, because right now, the only true storm payoffs that we have are reasonable is Brain Freeze, and that's only because of Underworld Breach, right? Tendril is one player focused, so it doesn't really work. Empty the Warrens is way too small. The other storm payoffs are just no good, and I don't know if we want Storm to be great in CDH, but I think that's neat that this is maybe an option.
If you have a way to give them haste, I think it makes it even better, because the problem with passing the turn after this is that there is a lot that can go wrong.
I don't know that they need haste, but specifically the rat thing, the one that makes the...
Song of Totentaz?
So if you're playing Song of Totentaz and you're doing Storm stuff, maybe.
Maybe this is a Rogthrast card?
Maybe.
Is that what that means?
It's nice to have a payoff that is difficult to interact with. I think Mind's Desire might be better, and they're not playing Mind's Desire.
I think so, too, because the other problem is that you have to Song of Totentaz after you've done all this storming and cast your 6-mana payoff.
And then they can just, spell pierce that.
Spell pierce that. Yeah.
You know, or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm not saying this is a great CDH card. I think it'll be an awesome commander card. I wouldn't fault people for trying it out in CDH just a little. See what we're dealing
yeah.
with.
Yeah. Should we talk about, like, other cards that we know we're going to talk about in the set review? I kind of want to stay away from that right now.
Okay. We could do it just a brief, just like say what they are and say we'll revisit this one, or you don't even want to talk about them at all.
Well, if you're watching the video, you'll notice that there is a new Narset on screen. So like there are definitely some cool new cards that they spoiled that could make some impact in CEDH, but
I don't think this one is going to be an all-star. We can talk a little bit more about it in the set review. I think it might do some interesting things, the Narset, but yeah, we can kind of skip it a little bit.
We'll give our full thoughts and opinions on it then. Yeah,
what other stuff? I know we got some art for the blind and something of the Blind Eternities,
yeah, which is going to be the next magic related standard set that will come out after Final Fantasy. We got a lot of art that just kind of showcases the space setting. You see a lot of spaceships in it. There's a really cool hurricane world. Have you seen any of this art, Dylan?
Oh yeah,
hurricane world looks really cool. Yeah,
I'm interested to see how they'll do space stuff, and I hope they do it in a way that feels fantasy-ish. I like the sci-fi stuff, but to me, Magic's coolest part is the fantasy element. So I hope there's a way to make wizards in space feel like wizards in space and not like astronauts. I know there's got to be some like gear, and I'm not really, you know, I'm not looking against that, but I'm really interested to see if we get some like fantasy element in space. Because for me, I'm not familiar with a ton of wizards in space shit. Do you know what I mean? That feels good and real
this
and cool.
Is, yeah, and I'll tell you this. Just looking at this art, I didn't really get the chance to look at a lot of this beforehand. And just looking at this now, it's making me even more confused. Because, like, it looks like there's a lot of different planets we're going to be going to. Like, there's a lot of different worlds, which makes me pretty curious. Like, they're not planes of existence on their own. Is that how get to them? Like, I don't know what the story would be, but it would make sense to me that because we have the Omen Paths now, that's how we're able to get to the Blind Eternities. And if the planes are just, like, planet-looking things, then I guess that kind of makes sense.
I wonder if we'll find out that planes are actually just planets.
I've always thought this about Ravnica.
Yeah.
Is there an edge of the city? Is there an end to, like, where does the plane end?
Yeah. That's true. Is Ravnica there? This
Are
might be
flat?
Known.
Is if there you, a flat plane theory?
If you know this, let us know. But like, is each plane its own individual planet? I don't really know that. Does Ravnica have other areas of the planet that's not a city?
When I look at the map of Dominaria, like you can see a map of Dominaria, but that's basically what it would be like for a globe, like that's spread out onto a map.
So
right?
I wonder if through the Blind Eternities we'll quickly see the Innistrad planet. It's there and it's spooky and whatever.
Or is it
you know?
The Truman Show and he goes up to the edge of the skyline and just like taps on it and they're like, oh shit, we're in a big dome.
I think it's gonna be super sweet. I think the space art is gonna look awesome. I'm really excited to see what the basic lands look like, because if we get more black hole and eclipse type lands, I think those will look really sweet.
We got Tezzeret looking like a badass too. Fucking love Tezzeret.
Badass is one way to say how he looks in this particular image. I don't think he looks bad. To me, I think he looks like he's like relaxed, you know. He doesn't look like he's ready to kick ass.
No, that's
he's
how
chilling.
Badass he is that he can relax and still
he's big
emit
dog.
This
he's top
intimidating
you know,
aura
you might
at
be
the
right.
same time.
You might be right.
He doesn't need to be on edge at his
He's
max.
Not a warrior right now. He's a leader.
He's doing something. I don't know.
We don't know the fucking story.
I don't know. And then here's what I'm really excited about. The last thing, Universes Beyond Avatar The Last Airbender is the final previously unannounced Magic set of 2025.
Dude, this was on your list.
This was one of the universes that I wanted to go to big time. And this coincides with the announcement of the new animated TV series that will be taking place after Legend of Korra.
Makes sense.
But considering this is just Avatar The Last Airbender, I don't think we'll be exploring anything outside of the three seasons of the original show.
The Nickelodeon show.
Exactly.
That's what you think it's going to be that specific?
It'll just be those three,
Because there's other like books and stuff and there's other stories from
Even like the other show, Legend of Korra. Like I don't think, I don't think we'll touch any of that. Yeah. Again, I think with a lot of these sets, we want the ability to revisit them. Like we will be doing with like Marvel and stuff like that.
So eventually we'll get to the Korra stuff in another Airbender set or whatever.
Yeah, because it's clear now they're not doing Marvel set, Marvel set, Marvel set, Marvel set. They're going to do Spider-Man
set,
and
Iron
then
Man
we'll
set.
Go back to X-Men at some other point.
That's crazy to put a whole set just Spider-Man. We'll talk about that more when it comes. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but that it feels kind of crazy to me that it's that specific
so
like that.
There's so much Spider-Man.
That's true.
He's been around since the 60s, man.
I wonder if they'll do like the really old one, the fire. Wasn't there? He had like partners. He had like a fireman and like an ice girl or something, didn't he?
Shark Boy and Lava Girl. That was a different thing, Dylan.
No. There was definitely an old Spider-Man cartoon where like his sidekicks was like a fire guy and someone else, a girl that I don't remember, an ice girl or something. I wonder if that will make its way into like part of the Spider-Man set.
I watch a lot of like the old Spider-Man cartoons, if I'm being honest.
We're getting off track. Airbender.
Either way, Avatar The Last Airbender.
We're going to have airbenders be the white cards, right? The firebenders will be red cards, earthbenders green cards, waterbenders blue cards, but then what is black?
Someone brought up to me like, oh, the White Lotus Society could be something, but I feel like the White Lotus would be white.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like, I think that's a really obvious way to do it, but at the same time, I see a lot of these characters, because of their character growth, that they have been like multicolor for a lot of reasons. Like, I don't think you're just going to make Katara mono blue because she's a waterbender. There's other colors that she embodies that I think, like maybe blue-white makes a little bit more sense for her.
Maybe Zuko will be black-red or something.
And then maybe we'll get multiple Zukos. Like, maybe we'll get teenage angsty Zuko as like a black-red card, but then maybe we'll get a more like a more calm Zuko that's
some other color.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah, like red white maybe he becomes red white instead.
I'm excited about that only because I don't know a ton about it. I only know it through other stuff, and I've seen like I think most of the Nickelodeon show like a while ago. They're going to have to put a lot of care into it because I feel like that community like really loves that show, and I think they're going to do a good job.
Could you imagine
if
they based it all on the M. Night Shyamalan movie?
They did like the opposite of the Lord of the Rings stuff and everyone's super pissed.
Yeah, they'll do the same thing that they did with Arcane where they just take screenshots from it and that will be the art.
Yeah, is that what they did with the Arcane stuff?
Yeah, all the Arcane stuff is just screenshots
it's
from
directly
Arcane.
From,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I hope they don't do that exactly. I hope it's original art. That feels kind of a little bit cooler, I feel.
I think so too, yeah.
What else did they reveal from this? I know they revealed a couple more cards from Dragons. We saw Little Baby Siege Rhino. We saw a new Jeskai casual option maybe for you that almost looks like a Sun Titan.
Yeah, that's kind of like a Savine's Reclamation on a dragon, which seems cool.
I wonder if what that's doing, yeah.
We got a new Sarkin as well, which is also interesting. And we got to see that there's the...
Oh, he's the red creature. He's a little dinky red creature.
He's a little dinky red creature that says, you may behold a dragon.
Oh, I think black red Sarkin was like one of the first planeswalkers that I ever like really was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Even
Sarkin
though,
the Mad, he was so dope.
So badass. Not, I don't think that great, but like certain casual commander decks played it for me at the time. I don't know, whatever. That was a cool one. So I always love seeing Sarkin back again, but I didn't love this card.
No, neither do I. This one, we're not going to talk about in the set review, so I'm okay talking about it now. When he enters the battlefield, you can behold a dragon, and if you do, you create a treasure. And to behold a dragon, you choose a dragon you control or reveal one from your hand.
So this is like champion. I think like fairies had like champion of fairy, except that was specifically from one in play.
It's like combining champion and forecast, but champion made you get rid of the creature to have it come back champion creature was dealt
this,
with.
You just point to it.
You just point to it and just go, I have it.
I have it here or here.
Behold
a
dragon.
I have it. And then you make a treasure when you do that?
You make a treasure if you behold a dragon. And whenever a dragon you control enters, put a +1/+1 counter on Sarkin. And until the end of turn, he becomes a dragon and gains flying. He's also a 2-mana 2/2.
I wonder if there's something that you can do with Cloudstone Curio where you bounce this in and out to make treasures.
Well,
every time it enters, it makes a treasure. If you reveal the same, if you behold the same dragon, is that something?
No, because first of all, you need to get a dragon. And they're not cheap.
And they're not normally cheap.
They're not normally cheap. Well, I guess if you have one in your hand, it's okay because you can behold from your hand. But then it only makes one treasure, so whatever else you are getting needs to be able to net mana.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, which means Sticker Goblin was going to go infinite with the ham sandwich anyway, so.
Okay. Can we talk about the mocks, or should we wait for that one for the review?
Let's wait for the mocks for the review, because I feel like because it's a mocks and because Narset's a Jeskai commander, like, they're ones I don't want to
talk about now.
But we could talk about Skirmish Rhino. If you wanted to,
it's just it's a little baby Siege Rhino.
That's it.
Someone told me that this was the original design for Siege Rhino. It was going to be this, a 3-mana 3/4 that did this, and then last second they upped it for, I don't know, there was a reason they upped it.
And they gave Anna Fenza that stat
something
line
like that.
Instead.
Yeah, and then Siege Rhino was very busted in standard and even very powerful modern for a while.
Yeah, it got Birthing Pod banned.
Yeah, this one's not going to see play in our format, of course, but I think it'll be a powerful card in some format, standard at least.
Could you imagine if Birthing Pod was still around and you could pod Skirmish Rhino into Siege Rhino?
Ooh, yeah, you probably would do that in modern. I don't know if you would. That feels good, though. That feels insane.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah,
Why wouldn't you? That
feels
really good.
Cracked.
I'm excited for this set. I think it's going to be cool. How many times have we been to this set? Two?
We've only been to Tarkir once.
No.
Yeah.
Well, okay. The last one was, I guess, a block then, right? Because we did the time stuff. That was the only time?
We had three sets that were one block.
We never revisited it?
This is our first revisit to Tarkir. Yeah.
I was an active standard player when this set comes out. Like, I was, like, entrenched in standard. So this will feel nostalgic for me for that reason. I was like, I think this, I like had my first top eight with a Siege Rhino. It was like an SCG standard top eight or something like that. It feels cool to come back to this set. Dragons are awesome. I'm super excited for this shit.
The only other thing that I want to say about this weekend was that the Pro Tour also went on this weekend.
Someone won.
Matt Nass won.
Matt Nass. Congrats, Matt Nass.
Matt Nass won. He won with an Overlords deck. The domain.
Those cards are good.
Overlords.
With the Traxa in it?
The two Overlords that I think most of the decks are playing are the green and the white Overlords, I think.
I only know the black ones. He's a little bit of modern play. I actually don't really know what the white and green one do.
The white one, who gives a shit?
It wins standard tournaments. That's what it does.
So his deck had no Atraxa.
No Atraxa.
But it had four of the green Overlords that makes a colorless land token named Everywhere. And then it had four of the white ones that when it enters or attacks, you make two 2/1 insect tokens with flying.
It sounds like just inevitability. You get inevitability, an early spell, yeah. Later you get a bigger spell.
Xur Eternal Schemer is the other four of creature in the deck.
Oh, this makes your enchantments into creatures.
Yeah, you can have a non-aura enchantment. Yeah, so while they're still impending, you can turn them into a 5/5 or a...
Wait a minute.
Power in terms is equal to its mana value. Dude, the white one becomes a 7/7.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that's sick. And it has lifelink too,
and
right?
It will have lifelink and death touch and hexproof.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's just enchantment creatures, by the way.
Oh, so
when they're done impending, they will just have those abilities then.
It grants it permanently?
For Xur Eternal Schemer, yep.
Enchantment creatures.
This is a static line. Oh. Enchantment creatures you control have death touch, lifelink, and hexproof.
Oh, wait. What's the activated ability do?
One and a white. Target non-aura enchantment you control becomes a creature in addition to its other types, and its base power and toughness are the mana value.
So you still use Xur to turn them on, but then the static ability... it remains them on.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. That's awesome.
Fucking nutso. Okay. That makes
sense. Very cool.
And then it's an Up the Beanstalk deck with Leyline Binding.
Oh, sure. Up the Beanstalk is great.
I might get into standard. This deck slaps.
I wish Up the Beanstalk was playable in CDH. I wish we were able to find a deck that went with that because that deck is cracked. That card is cracked.
Yeah, I love Up the Beanstalk every time I've played it. So congratulations, Matt Nass, for winning the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Anything else?
No.
Chicago was great. Thanks again for coming.
And again, I know I've already said this before, but thank you everyone for coming and experiencing Scrap Babies Live with us, coming to our meet and greet as well. We're very excited for Vegas, where we will hopefully be doing a lot more stuff too.
Definitely. And thanks for watching. If you want to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Pat Fire, Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Fils Go to 9, Quadjay, Hamid, Lauren Connell, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you so much, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off your orders.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Edo Japutra, Ghost Stories, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mystic Muffin Man, Dalton Poteet, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
You said Mystic Muffin Man twice.
Zachary Coulson.
Just in case. I can't tell if I can actually hear them or if I can for real hear them, so just wait a second. This bell's going on really long.
They do songs. Have you noticed that?
At noon they do songs.
It's a full-blown song.
Only sometimes, though. They're going to be doing, like, pop songs. Bing,
bony. They not like us. They're not like us.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding.